The Gospel of Matthew, the 22nd chapter, beginning with the first verse, Matthew 22, verse 1, the Word of God for the people of God. Thanks be to God. Jesus spoke to them again in parables, saying, "The kingdom of heaven is like a king who prepared a wedding banquet for his son. The king sent his servants to those who had been invited to the banquet to tell them to come, but they refused to come. Then the king sent more servants and said, 'Tell those who have been invited that I have prepared my dinner. My oxen and fattened calf have been butchered and everything is ready, so come to the wedding banquet.' But they paid no attention, and they went off, one to his field, another to his business. And the rest, they seized his servants, they mistreated them, and they killed them. The king was enraged. He sent his army, he destroyed those murderers, he burned their city. Then he said to his servants, 'The wedding banquet is ready, but those I invited did not deserve to come. So go to the street corners and invite to the banquet anyone you find.' So the servants went out into the streets and gathered all the people they could find, both good and bad. And the wedding hall was filled with guests. But when the king came in to see the guest, he noticed a man there who was not wearing wedding clothes. And he asked the man, 'Friend, how did you get in here without wedding clothes?' And the man was speechless. And then the king told the attendants, 'Tie him hand and foot and throw him outside into the darkness where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth, for many are invited, but few are chosen.'" May God add his blessings to this, the reading of his word. Have you ever gone to an event where when you left the house, you thought that you were appropriately attired, only to have gotten to the event and discovered that you were woefully, woefully underdressed? I don't know of a more painful experience. That happened to me some years ago. I had been invited to preach at a special July emphasis at the First Baptist Church of Tifton, Georgia. They called the emphasis Sunday on Monday. And it was a series of worship services on Monday nights during the month of July, as in many South Georgia, North Florida communities, there are a lot of people who have places along the coast and along the beach. And in the summer months, people tend to be away. And so in Tifton, they thought, what a wonderful idea, knowing that folk will be coming back to be at work on Monday. Why don't we just take the Monday nights in July and have special worship services then? Pastor was a dear friend. We went back to seminary days in Louisville, and so he called me, being relatively close in Tallahassee, and said, "Would you come up and preach the first one?" And I said, I would be honored. And in my mind, thinking Monday night, probably be a couple of hundred people there, relatively informal occasion, I wore a golf shirt, khaki slacks, put on a blue blazer because I thought to myself, well, you are preaching. And when I got to Tifton, I was shocked. There were 500 people who had come to the First Baptist Church of Tifton, Georgia on Monday, July the 2nd, and they were all dressed in their Sunday best. They looked just like you looked this morning. Suits and ties and dresses, even the three rows of young people who were at the very front of the church where the deacons are sitting this morning were dressed better than I was. I was mortified, and I did the best that I could in my golf shirt and my blue blazer, and they never asked me to come back to Tifton. And I can't say that I blame them, because when you underdress for an event, what you are saying with your dress is that I am not taking this occasion as seriously as I could have. And from that moment on, I made a vow to myself, when in doubt about the dress, many of you learned this long before I did, when in doubt, always dress up. When in doubt, always dress up. Now, that painful memory came back to me this week while I was looking at this parable that is before us this morning from Matthew's Gospel, the parable of the wedding banquet, which, when you think about it, is a story that we don't read too much, we don't study that much, we don't hear many sermons on it, because it is a somewhat complicated story. It begins easily enough. Jesus is speaking with the chief priest and the elders. You'll remember from last week, the chief priest and the elders were those who were questioning the authority of Jesus. On what grounds do you think you have the authority to do what you were doing and to say what you were saying? And at this point, the chief priest and the elders are still in what we might call the undecided category when it comes to Jesus. They give evidence that they are open to his message, but they just aren't certain about who he is or what he has come to do. And quite frankly, now after he has been telling them these parables that challenge their place in God's kingdom, they are moving into the opposition camp, like this parable. A king is going to throw a big wedding banquet, a wedding party for his son. And so Jesus says this king decides to send out a first notice, what we call today a save the date notice. You get those all the time. People just giving you a heads up about an important event that is yet to come so that you can mark your calendars, you can clear all of your appointments, you can make it a point to be there. The king issues a sort of save the date notice, and the people refuse it. They reject it. The people whom the king has invited decide that the king's banquet is not worth the effort to be there. Now, you have to understand a bit of the context. It's a shame and honor culture, the first century world, where Jesus is telling this parable. And there is no greater honor that could be bestowed on any person than to be invited to a royal banquet. A royal banquet. This is the king's son. I mean, it would be the kind of event where you would make sure that you would cancel any other appointments that you had made. You would clear your calendar. You would circle the date 10 times. You would make it a point to be there. And remarkably, these people don't. You know, think William and Kate. You remember how people went bananas some years ago over that royal wedding. If you had been sent an invitation to attend the wedding of Prince William and Kate, I would imagine that you would have made every effort to get there. That's what we're talking about. But these people, they don't. And the king is in a bind because it's a shame and honor culture. And the king has been put in a place where he has been massively disrespected. So what does he do? When the real invitation comes, you know, there's a save the date invitation and there's the real invitation. He's only sent a save the date invitation, which the people whom he has invited have summarily rejected. Now he sends the real invitation. And he jazzes up the invitation. He sends out his servants to tell those who have been invited, this is a can't-miss occasion. Look, I have done everything. It's all prepared. The oxen, the fatted calf, they've all been butchered. You don't want to miss this event. I have pulled out all the stops to make this the kind of party that no one should ever want to miss. It is the royal equivalent of the king getting down on his knees and begging his subjects to come to the party. Unthinkable in a shame and honor culture. But the king wants the people whom he has invited to come. He wants them to come that desperately. So do they come? Remarkably, they don't. One goes to the lake. One goes to the farm. One goes to the business. They all have excuses. There are other places they need to be. They can't make it. And the king is understandably enraged. And so you can appreciate how after they have rejected his invitation, and even a few of them have done worse, they've taken the messengers and they have killed the messengers. The king marshals his entire army and conquers the city and burns it to the ground, which, by the way, is exactly what happened to Jerusalem about 40 years after Jesus' resurrection, when the Roman army invaded Jerusalem and burned it to a crisp. But that's not the end of the story. When the king plans a party, the party will go on. And so what does the king do? He tells his servants to go out and to invite everyone. Both good and bad. Because now the invitation isn't being extended to people who are deserving of it. The king is not inviting people to the party who can do something for him. The king doesn't care about who they are or what they have or what they have done. he tells his servants, go out and invite everyone, good and bad, until the wedding hall is filled with guests. But the punch of the parable for us is not the fact that there are some who reject the invitation to be a part of the kingdom of heaven. That's not what Jesus really is saying with this parable. Even though there are many who are summoned but who flatly reject the invitation, the punch of the parable is not really that God invites all of us to be a part of what he is bringing together in what Jesus called the kingdom of heaven, regardless of who we are, what we have done, what's in our background, the things about which we are ashamed that don't disqualify us from a kingdom invitation. That's not the punch of the parable either. What gets me is how when the party is going on, the king sees a person who is woefully underdressed. And he has common clothing on. He's not in his wedding clothes. He hasn't dressed up for the event. He thought it was enough to be invited to the party, but he did not come to lift up his heart and celebrate. He would not come in a fashion that gave witness and testimony to how he was so happy to be a part. He was just there in everyday garb. And the king says, friend, how did you get in here in those common clothes? And what does he say to his servants? I want you to bind this man, tie him up, and throw him into the darkness, where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. By his garb, he had shown that he had not taken the occasion as seriously as he should. And I read this parable and I ask myself the question, do we take God's invitation to be a part of his kingdom as seriously as we should? I'm not just talking about how we look on the outside. No, I'm not talking about our outer appearances. That's not what Jesus is suggesting in this parable, but in terms of the state of my heart, in terms of our desire to live joyful lives, in terms of our gathering for experiences like this with a sense of expectancy, God's going to do something in my life. He's going to do something in our midst. Do we really conduct our faith in a fashion that we show ourselves to be in a constant state of exhilaration because of how we have been included in the kingdom party? I'm not so sure. And what Jesus is saying to us today is when we don't gather in his presence as excited and as expectant as we should, then the fact that we have even shown up doesn't really count for much, because our refusal to come prepared, to come fit for a celebration, shows that we have taken God's invitation to be a part of his kingdom family, we haven't taken it as seriously as those who have rejected it in the first place. That's a deep thought. If we have not come fit for a celebration, then our presence really doesn't say anything more than those who chose not to come in the first place. That's what Jesus is saying. Years ago, I remember a Woody Allen quote. How many times do you hear Woody Allen quoted in a pulpit? 90% of life, Woody Allen said. It was Woody Allen who came up with this saying. 90% of life is just showing up. You've heard that saying? No, it's not. According to Jesus, 100% of life and faith is what happens after we show up. 100% of life is what happens how we show up. Think about Zacchaeus, that bad tax collector. Jesus invited himself to Zacchaeus' house. You remember the story? In Jericho, Zacchaeus comes down from the sycamore tree. Jesus goes to his house. And Zacchaeus feels such a joy in his heart. He has a reason to celebrate. That he says to everyone who has gathered, I'm going to give half of my goods to the poor. And if I've cheated anybody in this town, I'm going to return it to him four times. It's what happens after we show up. Think of the Samaritan woman who went out to the well in the middle of the day, and there was a reason that she went out to the well all by herself in the middle of the day. That's not when women went to the well. They went to the well in groups at the beginning of the day, but here she is out at the well in the middle of the day, and she meets Jesus, and they engage in a conversation, and Jesus tells her things about herself that she didn't think anyone could possibly know. She had worked so hard to bury that past. Now Jesus has come along with a shovel to dig it up and to pour grace on it. She goes back to her village and she tells people, come and meet a man who told me everything about myself. Could he be the Messiah? And people in that Samaritan village came to believe in Jesus because of her joyful testimony. She had a reason to celebrate. Think of that Samaritan leper. He was 1 out of 10. We're approaching the Thanksgiving season. You'll hear this story a lot. Jesus heals 10 lepers and only one returns to give him thanks. And he was a Samaritan. Think of the woman caught in the act of adultery. The religious leaders were ready to stone her, and Jesus said, he who commits no sin should cast the first stone. And even though he was a person in that position, Jesus told her, neither do I condemn you. Go your way and sin no more. That leper, that woman caught in the act of adultery, they had a reason to celebrate. Think of Nicodemus, who came to Jesus by night. He was a ruler of the Jews. And he had everything to lose. And yet in his soul, Nicodemus knew that there was something that he had to gain and only Jesus could provide it. And he had that conversation with Jesus where Jesus talked with him about being born again. And a chord that had slumbered in Nicodemus's heart suddenly was stirred. And if you read the Gospel of John, Nicodemus continues to show up until the very end, when along with Joseph of Arimathea, They boldly go to Pilate and request the body of Jesus. They take it down from the cross. They bury Jesus in a borrowed tomb so that the stage is set for God to work in a way that only God can work. And on the third day, Jesus was raised to life so that every one of us this morning has a reason to celebrate. See what Jesus is saying? The kingdom of heaven is like a party that we get invited to, even though we don't deserve it, because it's not about who we are, what we have. It's about the King who desires us to be present. And all of those persons I named, they heard the kingdom music and they were willing to show up to the party fit for the celebration this morning. If you listen really carefully, you'll hear the strains of that music as well. The party, the kingdom party, it's still going on. And you're invited. You're invited to come and be a part of it. God really wants you to be there. God wants you to be a part of His kingdom party. And the way God views it, the party won't be the same without you. When you go, just make sure you are fit for the occasion.